Hey, what's going on, everybody? From the College of Professional and Continuing Education at Cal State Long Beach, I'm Dr. Pahol Sukhasikhan with Pacing Your Future, a podcast that charts the course of today's most exciting industries and the people that help shape them. Discover the many opportunities within the numerous fields we cover and be inspired by the stories of notable individuals who have paved their own paths. And just like our name suggests, our mission is to pace ahead, be proactive, adaptable, creative, and engaged. Whether you're seeking career insights, industry trends, or just simply inquisitive, let's pace your future together. And today we're joined by Samantha Galton, who, with over 18 years of experience in operations, business development, and strategic leadership across transportation, logistics, and maritime sectors, has delivered innovative, results-driven solutions. At the Port of Long Beach, she led the Commercial Operations Bureau, enhancing the port's value proposition and expanding market share through strategic customer engagement. Her background includes key leadership roles at BNSF, where she managed industrial sales and port development strategies across the southern half of the network. More recently, she held executive roles at Induct EV and Fleet Zero, overseeing commercial operations, customer success, and decarbonization initiatives. Samantha brings deep expertise in rail and port business development, innovation, and electrification strategy, driving sustainable growth and transformation at the intersection. Thank you for joining us, Samantha.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for such a great introduction.
Hey, we like to be everyone's hype person, right?
Yeah.
And no gender here. So with everyone's interviews, we like to start off with some fun. Imagine your industry is the main character in a blockbuster movie, because LA. What's the plot, and who are its main characters?
Okay, so like picture it. The city is Sensatia. It's plagued by like these villains called Chaos and Complexity. And our main character is Lex, the ninja logistician. And then she works under the cover of darkness to orchestrate the crazy that the chaos and complexity descends upon the city. Her only goal is to get the package of unknown contacts to its destination. It's full of stunts, obstacles, work stoppages, flat tires, and fees. And it's a spellbinding and riveting cinematic masterpiece of logistician deliciousness.
Can you repeat that one more time, that last phrase? Thank you. That sounds like a very riveting trilogy of logistics and supply chain.
Yeah, I see sequels going crazy.
I mean, you know, I think we have a franchise on our hands.
100%.
You know, so even though I went into your bio in the beginning, Samantha, I was hoping maybe you can, in your own words, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So I think a lot like the people in our careers now at our developing age, I fell into logistics. I did not plan for it, right? So grew up in San Diego, went to school in right outside of Philadelphia at Villanova, and really never thought of myself as any like type of transportation or anything like that. And then when I wanted to move to Texas, I fell into a job with the BNSF. Literally, my husband at the time said, "Hey, apply here." And I said, "What is that?" So picked the first one that was the job listed for a management trainee position, and ended up being a train master at the BNSF Railway. So I fell into it. It was lovely. And I fell into, actually, I think, the love of transportation and logistics from that job. And then from there, you know, as you said in my bio, kind of went on to have other roles at BNSF. So, you know, doing sales for national accounts. We could talk hours about how our food supply travels on rail if you wanted to, tomato paste in particular. And then had the port job, the port director job for a couple years, where I helped ports with their rail strategy. So what do you want to be when you grow up as a port, and how can I help you achieve that via rail? And then decided to jump ship, pun intended, to go work for the Port of Long Beach and their business development, and then went on to lead the Commercial Operations Bureau. After a while, I just decided, hey, you know, this might be the best time to take a chance, and started looking at startups. Had a friend who said, "Hey, you want to come and check out the startup that we're doing with battery electric ships?" And I said, "Absolutely, let's try it out." So went there for a while, leading their commercial strategy, and then went on to a more geriatric startup, just had been in the industry for a little bit longer, for high-powered wireless charging. And so now I find myself saying, okay, I've done a lot of things, and I know a lot about, or a little about a lot. So now I'm just doing some rail consulting for ports, kind of going back to my roots and trying to answer those questions again of what do my ports want to be when they grow up, and how do I bridge the gap with the railroads? Because there is definitely a learning curve of how to work with railroads.
That's amazing. And so I think, you know, the question that will follow from this is what led you to apply for the management trainee position in rail, and how did that opportunity shape your career?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. There are such things as right timing, right place, and a little bit of luck. And that is exactly what I got with the BNSF. It literally was a web search and just a click. I really did think that I was applying for a railroad that was like commuter, so that I'd be helping like click tickets on a train car. So I had absolutely no idea what I was walking into, and I'm just so grateful for that. On my first day of the job, I still asked, like, what is a train master? What exactly am I going to be doing? And I don't think I really figured that out for another 3 months. But just to let everybody know what a train master is, if you've never seen Thomas the Train, but it's Sir Topham Hatt, basically. So you're telling the guys and the gals on the ground, like, how to build the trains and what customers to apply. So it was this amazing, like, foundation and, like, basis for all of my work that came above it, because I got to understand the network. How does the rail work? How do customers interact with the rail? And I think it just made me into this, I guess, like, kind of logistics nerd of wanting to know how things got to the places that they got to. How do they get manufactured? And how transportation and logistics is really the basis of, like, life as we know it.
That's amazing. I think, you know, it's one of the things that is unique but not unique about the story you just told us, that, you know, anything can happen, right? And there's, like, chance everywhere, and there's possibility everywhere. And that speaks to a lot of the stories that have been told on our podcast, like Willy Zuniga going to school, dropping out, finding a job, sweeping floors at a rug company, and then, you know, finding his way all the way top to becoming the president of a company. And helping others find their path. So I think, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you from that is, life is precarious. Life is uncertain. There's possibility everywhere. What can you tell our listeners about, you know, when something comes at you that was unexpected, how do you adapt to changing those pathways?
Mm-hmm. So I like to think of life as like a pathway just full of doorways. Some of them open, wide open for you. Some of them open just a crack, and some of them you got to bang the door down to get to. This happened because I was at Villanova, and the path that I was on was to go get my master's and to basically become a professor. Like, I wanted to teach organizational communication. And at one point I just said, you know what, I don't want to learn anymore. I just want to go get a job and, like, starting on something. And this opportunity presented itself, and it was completely unknown. And so what I would say to people is jump in, right? Jump in, because you never know what's going to happen. And even if the trainmaster thing didn't work out for me, it got me one to another city, right? It got me into an industry that I had never known about. And it put me with people that I had never would have thought I would have interacted with. And so just in that, there was a lot of growing and a lot of maturation in just that decision. But like I said about the doors, sometimes you've got to knock. Sometimes you just have to bulldoze your way in, right? And take every opportunity and make sure that you are connecting with every single person on the way, because you never know how they will come back and touch you in your life in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's so much potential and so much growth, but I'm sure at the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of scary moments for you as
yes,
well, right?
Yeah.
So what challenges have you faced in this industry, right? Coming into this unknown profession, mm-hmm. and what insights would you share with others considering similar paths?
So I think the first thing I always told myself was everything is temporary, whether that's good or bad, but everything can be changed or fixed at some point in time. So I knew that if I didn't like this, if this was like the worst horrible decision of my life, I could always do something different, right? So stay in it for 6 months. At that point, I was just right out of college, so I just needed to make some money, and I needed to be able to pay my rent. So, like, get the paycheck, figure it out, and then if I liked it, great. If I don't, go do something else, right? So I think that's the first thing that I always remember, is that everything is temporary, and that you can fix it. You can fix it. So that's the first thing. And then I think challenging-wise, because I knew nothing about the transportation world, I didn't really know what I was stepping into. And it's no surprise to anybody that especially with railroading, but with logistics and transportation and things, it is a very male saturated environment. And so, and then also, like, I'm a Black female, so a lot of us in that either. So I think that was my biggest challenge of finding the allies and finding my space and finding my path, knowing my strengths, playing to them, and being able to use that to forge, you know, whatever journey I was going to go on, whether that would be going up or out, whatever. But that was a big deal. But, like, also part of that was being a train master at 22. I was put into a management role of managing mostly gentlemen who had been doing their jobs longer than I had been alive. That was huge. They could run circles around me, but I was challenged to lead them in some way. And so that was, like, I think one of my biggest learning journeys as what is my leadership style? How do I even go about, like, telling these guys what to do? And I realized, like, okay, there are certain times where it's a directive, right? What I say ends in a period. No need for debate. No need for you to say anything. That's it. But a lot of what I could do is invite them into the conversation and say, hey, this is how I'm thinking about building this train. What do you think? And just inviting them into that process made it so much easier for me to ask advice and all of that stuff. But I also had a point to say, okay, but I'm still your boss, right? So you can push me so far and we can collaborate so much, but I still need to be that manager. So at 22, that was huge. That was a really big learning experience where I saw a lot of other people taking a different route and being far less successful. So I think those were probably my biggest challenges. One, like, having to manage people who'd been doing their job longer than ever. And then two, just being different than everybody else and finding my my space, but also my power and all of that stuff, all while still maturing. Because 22, you're so young, right? So just all while maturing, still in my headspace. But it was fun. Learned a lot.
You stepped into your own power and realized your hustle is just as bad.
Yes.
Something I kept telling myself I was writing my dissertation. So
yes.
You know, I think that's such an amazing story, and about, you know, resilience and just coming up and just taking your seat at the table, because you as a train master prodigy, I mean, that's amazing, right? So, I mean, if you can go ahead and tell us, why is rail such a critical component of the logistics infrastructure?
Yeah, I'll take the prodigy. I don't know if I believe in that, but sure. So rail, when you look at economy of scale, is just the way to transport goods, right? So if you don't need your goods tomorrow, putting it on rail is going to be cheaper and it's going to be more efficient and it's going to have a smaller carbon footprint than anything else. If you look inside your house, I would say probably 85 to 90% of that stuff has probably touched a rail car in some part of its supply chain journey, whether it's raw or if it's finished goods. I mean, they transport energy in the form of coal or ethanol or petroleum products. They transport agriculture, so all of our food, whether that just be grains or anything like that. And then they transport cars and furniture and clothing. I mean, just about anything you could possibly think of, electronics, all has traveled by rail at some point. And whether that's from import through our West Coast ports or East Coast or Gulf or Canada, and then railing into the hinterlands, or if it's coming exported to something that we manufacture going out, it's all touching rail. And it's been really cool seeing the evolution of, like, the spotlight on rail, because I feel like just even with logistics before 2020, we, just like my ninja character, a lot of that transportation just operated in the darkness and nobody really knew or cared. But as soon as we had that pandemic and we had 99 ships off the coast and, you know, the rails were backed up because we had so much demand, everyone's like, wait, hold on, what? How does this happen? Well, why can't they? And then everybody became this, like, logistics quarterback saying how and why can't we do this? But it's also been really great for our industry as well too, right? Because now we have more people interested. So it really is, I think, rail is that really great connector between markets, either from the West Coast to the hinterlands or other. And one last plug that I will say is, I did have a student one time say, well, if rail's so great, but you're going to be taking away my dad's job as a trucker. And I said, no, because my two pieces of steel can only go so far. I still need trucking on the outsides of this, right? And if I can get the long haul piece done by rail, that means your dad can come home every night and just do that short dray from the railroads to the city. So it really, it's a great puzzle piece into the full transportation system that is, like I said, very efficient and something that we have to have to get things moving.
I think that's amazing. You know, how do we look at these industries but add the human aspect to it, right? Because people forget about that, right?
Yep.
And just reimagine that way. I think, you know, one of the things that you were mentioning was that everything touches the rail, right? Goods, supply chain, everything movement. And because we're in Long Beach and we know that, we understand that the Port of Long Beach is here, Harbor Trucking Association, the rail, everything. We don't live in silos. Can you explain how the importance of moving cargo between East and West Coasts and how rail plays such a huge role in that process?
Yeah. So it always comes down to like origin and then time. So if something's coming out of China, most likely it's going to go trans-Pacific, come hit the West Coast, and then go hinterland. But if it starts coming down into like the India and like the East and things like that, it might work better if it goes into the East Coast. So it's all about that. And then it's how fast do I need it, right? So if I can rail bridge it from LA Long Beach and go to Chicago and then maybe go in a little bit further, great. But maybe I need it a little bit faster or a little bit different. It's all about like asset utilization and where do I have my warehouses, and like, I mean, you could go in probably like for 2 hours and say, how do I optimize my supply chain and where's the best place that I go and how does rail connect? But I will say this, like what we used to see 30, 40 years ago is a lot of stuff coming into the West Coast and railing all the way sometimes even to the East Coast. That line of demarcation is starting to move westward, right? So instead of, I'm going to use very, very round numbers, 1,000 boxes going all the way to the East Coast, we now see more like 50, maybe even 25. And that line of demarcation continues to move west and west. So Chicago becomes our jump ball city, where everything west of that likely will go by rail and it'll likely come in from the West Coast. Everything east of that likely might come in from the East Coast. But rail is the great connector. Again, economies of scale. If you've got a lot of stuff, you put it on the rail because it's just so much more economical than doing just one truck at a time.
Amazing. I mean, but like going back to your story about humanizing the trucking experience for that one individual, right? And looking at rail in the context of everything. How does rail integrate with other modes of transportation mm-hmm. in the intermodal network? Mm-hmm. And why is it important to understand the full picture and not just trucking?
Yeah. Oh, there's so many ways you can move on rail. So you can, if you're going in a container and you're in like an international box, you can move at IPI, which means it stays intact. And that international box goes from LA Long Beach to Chicago. You could also say, I'm going to change it and I'm going to take that international box and I'm going to transload it into a 53-footer. And put that on a rail and go to Chicago. You could also say, hey, I'm going to take these 40-foot containers and I'm going to completely deconstruct them, put something all back in together again, and then put that on rail. So, I mean, like, it just all depends on again, your supply chain and what it needs to happen. But all of these then connect to the drayage community, to the warehouse community. And if one of those gets out of whack, downstream everything else was, which is why we call it the supply chain. If one of those links starts to just kink up, then you're going to see that downstream effect in every other sector. So if the railroads, if like what we had in 2020, where we just had so much demand that at the end of the line, so like in Chicago, we had problems people picking up their containers. So Chicago started getting backed up. Well, now we're not getting those empty cars back over to the West Coast. So now we're getting clogged up here. And so we weren't getting the flow that we needed. And then we didn't have enough truck drivers to get stuff off of the terminals. So it's just everything is interconnected. And so when we talk about like postmortem and like what happened and where are the bottlenecks, those identifiers are extremely important, because if that volume ever comes back again at the rate that it did, we're going to have the same bottlenecks again. So it's really important to like make sure that we analyze that and fix those bottlenecks so that we don't have that catastrophe.
I think that's important because, you know, about impact, right? And I think that you mentioning the supply chain and how things get backed up is so important. Because in a previous conversation that we had, you mentioned the impact of just being 10 minutes late with a rail car. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on how timing and precision affect the broader economy and supply chain?
Yeah. So depending on what kind of customer you are, but like I don't know, let's talk about like a production line, and they need their product at a certain point, because if that production line goes down, it costs thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands to get it starting again, right? So being on time is extremely important, but on the side of that too is the visibility of that, right? So in the last couple of years, we've worked really hard on supply chain visibility tools. Where is my stuff? Why can I track an Amazon package from the time that it gets shipped to the time that it gets to my door? I even know that it's five stops away. For some reason, you can't do that with a rail car, right? So like, where's my stuff? When am I going to have it? Then I can plan my labor, and then I can make sure everything stays going and stays fluid. But the same thing, like, if a rail car is late, or if we had to shift schedules and you're not communicating that, I am now impacting my customer in however way. And then if you think, like, again, downstream, if I miss my delivery and the customer ordered labor, do they have enough labor the next shift to actually unload it? And if the answer is no, how much more do they have to pay for overtime or to get other people in? Or if I say, hey, I'm not going to have it for two more days, does that person actually get paid because they were supposed to come in? So it's like the impact of that person, right? And their paychecks and then the product that they make is all very important. So again, it's all about communication. It's all about timing. Everybody makes mistakes. We're always going to have delays. It's just, how do we communicate that? And how do we make sure that our customers are able to plan for it? And I think the railroads have gotten so much better at that in the last 10 years, so much better at communication and making sure that their customers are able to plan for things like that.
Nice. I mean, I don't know about you, Samantha, but I know that myself and Angelo, our podcast crew, we make no mistakes.
I know. No, so I know. I know. It's like, I just want to make sure I'm reaching the broader audience. Nice. I know, it's not in front of me.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. 100%. I just want to circle back before we move on from rail, but yeah. Let's talk about food travel, which you mentioned previously. Just want to give some insights and your little story, maybe?
Yeah. So one of my first, I'll give you two. My first job as a salesperson, I was with this group called Customer Integration, and I had to go visit my first warehouse, and I really wasn't told what type of warehouse it was. It was cold storage. And they were like, hey, do you want to see the cranberries? I was like, sure. I had on, like, you know, casual pants or whatever and a short sleeve shirt, and they took me into the cooler of negative 50 with no parka, like literally every piece of moisture in my face was now frozen. And I was like, is this my job now? I have to go in unprepared into cold storage facilities. So that was fun, but it was really great to be able to see, like, how do they actually, like, what does the cold chain supply chain look like? And how do you actually maintain the right temperatures all through that supply chain? That was fascinating. And the second thing was like tomato paste. So tomato paste is used in a lot of things. And I had no idea how tomato paste was stored. A lot of it is in the valley, think Bakersfield, things like that. They're stored in these big crates. And I remember driving through and I'm like, how long have these crates been here? And the person told me like how they like distinguish where things go and how long. And she's like, yeah, those crates have been here for like 2-3 years. And I said, and what are they going to be used for? She's like, oh, we'll see the grade. And like, so the things that we look at more, like pasta sauce, that's higher grade tomato paste because you got to see it. Stuff that might get mixed into other things, lower grade pasta, like tomato paste. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm done with tomatoes, period. I don't need to have it anymore. I don't want ketchup. I was like, I'm good. But it is absolutely fascinating the way that like food travels on rail or truck or whatever. And the like, the chain of command that it has to go through and the quality checks and all of that stuff. But yeah, I'm good on tomato paste.
As I just bought 2 containers of ketchup for my house. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
So moving on, you've spoken about how your role helps you see the direct impact of logistics and what logistics has on the economy and everyday life. Can you share a moment when that realization really hit home for you?
Yeah, I think actually... So it's a really like selfish personal story, but during the pandemic, I was talking to one of my favorite furniture companies and I told them, hey, I just need for you guys to like help me. And they were like, what do you mean? I said, because I was on the phone with your customer support and I was just trying to get my stuff, and your customer support, all they could tell me was, sorry, it's coming. And I said, no, I just need you to tell me, is it on the water or is it a warehouse? And that customer support said, I don't understand what you're saying. I said, is my stuff on the water or is it in a warehouse? They're like, why would that matter? I was like, because then I can calculate when I think it'll get here. And the furniture company was like, wait, you had that? I said, yes, I had an hour-long conversation with your customer support about why I couldn't get my stuff. We need to fix that, right? That's number one. Number two is like, and also, can I please have my stuff? It was already 2 months late. So I think like when we think about logistics and we think about getting things to people, sometimes like that end user is not quite in mind. And like when we go to stores and we see out of stock product, when we go to, you know, the car dealership and we can't get the car that we want, or when we go someplace and we see everything that we need, or even like when you go to the store right now and you see your Christmas items, it is October, and you see Christmas items on the thing, you have to think about that stuff got here probably 3 months ago and has been sitting in a warehouse waiting. So like, I guess my message to everyone is logistics and transportation and procurement and supply chain is all around us. Literally, you just have to pick up the thing that's next to you and understand, like, how did it get to me and how many people it took to actually get it to us.
All hands on deck, right?
Yes, all the time.
In a previous conversation we had, Sam.
Do we talk that much?
I think so.
Okay.
I think we're besties. So I'm just letting your inner circle know right now. You mentioned in a conversation that a close friend of yours helped reshape how you saw your occupation. Can you tell the folks how so? And how did your friend help you see your job in a different light? And how has that changed the way you approach your work today?
Yeah, I didn't know you were listening that hard.
I'm a former educator, so I mean.
That's great. So I have a friend of mine who's actually one of my daughter's godmothers because she is just such a wonderful person. She's spent her whole life in public service. She's worked for the UN. She's been head of missions in places that were really war-torn, like a place that actually like had, her security was an issue in those types of places. And I just looked up to her so much. And every time I would talk to her, I'd just be like, gosh, you're literally out there saving the world. And she was just like, you are too. And I said, what are you talking about? I just do logistics. I just work for a train company. And she said, but without you, people wouldn't eat. Without you, people wouldn't have clothes. Without you, people wouldn't be able to live the lives that they live. And like, at that moment, I was like, girl, stop. And I was like, but wait, actually? It's kind of true. Like that's actually kind of right. So while I did love what I chosen as my profession, I never really thought that I was important or that what I did was important to anybody else. But what she showed me was like I and what I did and what everyone I think does in supply chain is again the foundation of living. And without what we do, we wouldn't live the lives that we do. And that completely kind of changed my perspective of like, okay, I am doing something good for the world. I might not be in Greenpeace and I might not be affecting people in that way, but I'm affecting people in their daily lives. And that's really special.
I mean, that's amazing. It's like, we're all interconnected and it's just, how do we reimagine the positions we hold and kind of unmask the nuances, right? And,
yes.
And all that stuff. Exactly. And I think, you know, with that leads us into a great conversation or our next conversation where you are now a new instructor for our College of Professional and Continuing Education. You are a new instructor for the Global Logistics Professional Program. So how did you get involved with our program and what inspires you as an instructor?
Yeah. So again, when I talk about those little doors that sometimes are opened by a crack, it was a chance meeting, a very, very long time ago that I said, hey, I think I might be interested in this. And then the opportunity came up. And like 4 years later? And I was like, wait, what? Like, really? Like, you really want me to do? I was like, yeah, no, I think I could do this. I will say in my background, like, I used to teach ballet to 4 and 5 year olds. And I absolutely loved that. Now it's very different, you know, 4 and 5 year olds to professionals, right? But then, you know, as I said, my other path was going to be a professor. And so there's something that I've always really been interested in education. And but up until that moment, I actually didn't really think I had much to say, right? Like I didn't have much to teach. And so when the opportunity came up, I was like, all right, I'm going to dip my toe. We're going to see how this goes. And I remember like before my first class, my daughter was like, Mom, you should sit down. You're like really nervous. And I was like, yeah, I don't know how this is going to go. She's like, it's going to be fine. Mom, like, what are you doing? And I was like, and I just kept pacing my house, and I was just like, I'm going to die. So I remember getting on my first one, and I said, hey guys, I'm really nervous. So can you please make this easy on me? Like, don't ask questions. But then I realized, and I think this is something that we all have to take back and reflect. I think we know a lot more than we think we know. Yeah. And that when given an opportunity, seize the moment. Somebody has seen something inside of you to give that opportunity to you, and just embrace it. Rely upon, you know, yourself and your training. And it went great. And it was lovely. And I came out of it like actually like screaming. And my daughter says, Mom, you good? And I was like, oh, I'm so happy. This is like the best thing ever. So anyways, long-winded answer. Something that like had popped off years before now presented itself again, and I'm just like thrilled, absolutely thrilled to be here.
So now that you are both a train master prodigy and now instructor prodigy, I think, you know, what key insights or values do you hope to impart on your students? And what fresh perspectives or emerging visions of logistics and supply chain management are you excited to share with them? And with such a fresh perspective on the industry, what opportunities do you envision emerging that others might overlook?
The whole, like, all of these, like, fresh and envisioning, it's making me feel really young. So thank you about that.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate that. Help. That was, like, right spot on. I think the first thing is, like, I love the bridge between, like, education and real life. And so because I'm doing the job that I'm doing right now, I feel like I can bring the perspective of like, here's what's actually happening in my workforce right now. Like, here are the projects that I'm working on, obviously not dispelling anything that's confidential, but like, here's the stuff that I'm actually seeing right now. And like, how can we learn from that? And the thing that I want to make sure that our students understand is a lot of logistics is experience, right? You can only learn so much in the classroom. Now you just got to get in there and get your hands dirty. And part of that is, yes, bringing in all of our industry experts that we have in this program to talk about all of the things and getting those base knowledge. But the one thing I told the class was like, just get started. Just get in, start asking questions, and get in with anybody you could possibly get into, whether it's procurement or warehousing or trucking, it doesn't matter. Just start somewhere and you can build from that from anywhere. Education is such a great process, and it's also like, I think it's the best way to learn how to learn, but logistics is hands-on. It is like full court press. You gotta be on the court. You cannot just be a bystander in it. And so I want all of my students to hear me and listen, and I will teach you the fundamentals, but I also want to provide you that opportunity to go and get your hands dirty and like just get in there. So any type of networking or connections that I can make for my students, you know, that's what I'm here for, because again, like I think you have to just do in logistics, and then from there you can springboard to wherever you want to go.
Nice. I think, you know, that's one of the foundations for what we do at the College of Professional and Continuing Education, right? It's like, because we do so much of workforce development and we want our students to succeed, upskill and upscale their careers, we're all about how do we provide practical knowledge to create experiential knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. have it be hands-on, because a lot of our folks are working professionals or, you know, they have lives already, mm-hmm. and their lives that are solidified. And just how do we help bolster and create nuances and opportunities? So I think that's great. Sam, just to go unpack that further, do you maybe envision opportunities that might be emerging that other people may overlook?
So yes, I think the railroad is over 100 years old, right? It's something, it runs over two pieces of steel, and you think that it's so, it seems so easy, but it is so complex. And I think the logistics challenges that we're facing now are so different than what we were facing before, but also the same. So it's going to take a different kind of strategic mind to see all of these puzzle pieces coming together. And how to fix it. So of course, I know everybody's talking about AI and optimization in that way. So yes, but I also think like this fresh group of, I'll call them kids because they're younger than us, that are coming in, they're going to see a different way of doing things. And that is so encouraging, right? Because, you know, us old fogies, like I'm still working on handshakes, right? Like I want to see somebody, I want to be in the room with them, and I want to negotiate and then go on that. That might not be their perspective, but I think they'll figure out a different way to merge different pieces of technology and transportation. So, you know, whether that be autonomous, whatever, or it could be using tools that we just might not have thought of before. And so like when we put them through these exercises of looking at a balance sheet or looking at, you know, here's this company and how would you do it? I think there's so many different like nuanced ways that this new crew is going to come in and piece it together that I'd be like, well, huh, I didn't think that could actually work out. And then it does. And so I think there's just a new wave of how we're going to look at the supply chain as a whole, if that makes sense, especially with nearshoring, especially with, you know, tariffs, and like different regulations and electrification and on all of those things coming all together. It's going to take a new, fresh perspective on it that I think us old heads to kind of get jaded in our spot for. So I'm looking forward to those conversations.
I mean, like a lot of the conversations that we're having with folks that come into the podcast, or, you know, when we talk to the industry experts in our classes, it's like, for instance, AI, mm-hmm. and how that's mm-hmm. changing things massively right now. Just to motivate, since we're coming to the end of the podcast, I just want to shift gears a little bit and do end on like more of an inspiring note. I mean, this whole conversation has been inspiring.
Oh, Samantha. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
And we've gleaned things here and there that will probably answer these questions. But what motivates you to inspire others to explore careers in logistics and transportation?
So I still think as much of a boost our industry has gotten so far, I still think it's a little bit of a black hole. So like even when I talk to my daughter's friends, what do you want to be? It's a lot of the other typical answers come out. And what I want to say is, like, logistics and transportation are not just about moving stuff. You can be a lawyer and work at the port or at the railroad. You can be a doctor and work at the port or the railroad. You can work in procurement. You can work in buying. Just about anything you can possibly do can be applied to the rail or to the transportation industry. And so I think, like, for me, I would want to, like, push the message, whatever you want to do, you could do it in logistics as well, if that's something. And like I had a friend whose son was like really into like data science. And I was like, can you please do data science for logistics? And they're like, wait, what? I was like, big data is all that we do. Like we collect all these tiny little data pieces and we need somebody to synthesize that and to be able to then apply it to optimization. They're like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. And so I think like that's my biggest piece is like if I can inspire anybody to say like this no-name chick from San Diego went to Philly and then worked for a railroad, like who does that? Well, like I did and it's been awesome and like you could too and like you can really find your niche. Even if you don't start in it, you can find it and you can find a career that's very lucrative and very fulfilling in transportation and logistics. And I think that's the biggest thing. And like I didn't see anybody really ahead of me, I'll say it, that looked like me, that acted like me. I'm a little bit different. Even in my sales roles, I'm not your typical salesperson. And so I would love to make sure that people understand you don't have to be typical to be successful. You can be yourself and you can do all these things and you can then inspire other people to do the same and like to forge that path.
You know, I think one of the things, because a lot of, on the professional side, at the College of Professional Continuing Education, we deal with non-credit courses, right? And you being one of our instructors, why do you feel it's important to be involved in teaching non-credit courses? And what do you see as the value in sharing your experience with these learners?
So I have a problem with that, like, whole title of non-credit. Because while I get it, like, there's no actual, like, credits going towards a degree. Like, it's a lot of credit. Like, it's a lot of work, right? And so, like, you just have to, I look at it very differently as, while it might not be going to your degree, you're still doing something for you. You're doing something for your own development. You're doing something for you to move to a different place, right, to elevate yourself. So I think we all do that, it just might not be formalized, like, right? So I'm trying to do Duolingo so I can be bilingual. That's non-credit. right? I'm trying to like watch videos on how to optimize my cleaning in my house. That's non-credit. Well, this is even better because this is about to get you to a better place in your career and your mind. So I think it's really important to take all these different things because not everything has to go towards either a degree or whatever. It's just about bettering yourself and your development. And that could just be a non-credit course. So I just see that as nomenclature. Like, I think it's a very credit-worthy course. That's the first part. And I don't know, once again, like, maybe I just don't have the best of self-esteem, but, like, I love sharing my experience, and I think that it's great. I don't think I'm, like, the best at just about anything. However, I think if I can share my story with one person and that inspires them to do what they need to do, my job is done. Right? I've got a kid at home. She don't listen to me. So I need somebody else to hear my story, to listen to me, to do something else. That, I think, is the value of sharing. And that I would encourage everybody to do so because, you know, they say, like, one smile can change somebody's day. One story can change somebody's trajectory. And if that can be my story, great. Fantastic. Would love that.
You offer such insight to what does non-credit actually mean? And I think that that's beautiful, right? Because we've normalized what does education mean? Right. What does a degree mean? You know, how hard do we have to work, right? People are working their butts off every single day, you know, and how do we privilege those who are not necessarily as visible and the labor that they provide? So I think that's an excellent point to make, Sam. I think, you know, to end with this inspiring note, you know, and you talked about how you tell your students and you tell folks who are interested in logistics and supply chain, ask questions, do, right? Be proactive. What, just to hit this home, what advice would you give someone who's curious about logistics but doesn't know where to start?
Yeah. So a lot of people think I'm this like huge extrovert who loves talking to people. I actually hate it. I'm a true introvert through and through. I hate going to like networking parties and like being in a room full of people that I don't know. I hate it. It's awful, but I do it because it is the best way to do anything. Having that business card or that contact has gotten me to where I am. So I think my biggest piece of advice, if you're curious, ask somebody. Find that one person in the room and just start asking a question. And then you save that business card and you follow up and you say, hey, thank you so much for that conversation. I really appreciate it. Can I possibly continue this conversation? And if they never respond, great, but you still have that business card so that maybe in the next, you know, next month, if you have another question, you can ask them that question or they pass it along to somebody else. Meet as many people as you possibly can. Make meaningful connections and use those people because I think I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but the one thing that people say about networking is sometimes it's empty. It's people are just saying, doing the small talk or whatever. Make a meaningful connection so that when you contact that person, they say, oh yeah, Paul, I remember you. You were the one with the good hair. And we talked about our dogs and we did all the fantastic. What, how can I do to help? And the one thing that I will tell you is everybody wants to help. I don't know any other professional like myself who would say, I don't want to help that guy. Like, I don't, the student came up to me, I don't want to help them. No one's saying that. Sometimes they don't know how to help, but they want to. So give them the opportunity to, which means make all those connections, shake those hands, talk about dogs, talk about kids, talk whatever you need to do to make sure that you're a little bit memorable, that'll go a long way. And I think that is the first way to start in logistics because it is still a who do you know game. And that's how you're going to start making your way and getting around and understanding what's going on because people who have knowledge in their head, they just need to be tapped. Hey. I need to get into that knowledge.
And I think it's apropos to end with because, like I mentioned, Willy Zuniga in a previous interview said, you know, when you're networking, act like you're being interviewed. Mm-hmm. Act like this is a professional interview that you are introducing yourself, introducing your skill set, who you are, your life, you know? Doesn't have to be super professional, but there has to be some substance there.
Yes.
And that will make you stand out.
Yep.
So
100%.
Well, thank you so much, Samantha, for coming on to our podcast, and we hope you enjoyed yourself.
I mean, it was a little bit of fun.
A little bit.
Just a little bit of fun. No, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for tuning in to Pacing Your Future. We hope today's installment has inspired you and provided valuable insights into the dynamic world of industry and innovation.
Stay tuned with us for more stories, opportunities, and expert advice to help you navigate and shape your future. Until next time, keep pacing your future with confidence and curiosity.